When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. We'll kick things off with a big game in the Premier League. Liverpool taking on Manchester City. It would be City who would open the scoring. Quick thinking from the corners. Kevin De Bruyne would find Stones at the near post to make it 1-0. But as the game went on, Liverpool got better and better, and they would get the equaliser via a penalty as Edison would come down and bring down Nunez after a poor back pass from Ake. McAllister would convert it to make it 1-1. Liverpool felt they should have a penalty late on in the game when Doku looked like he'd kick McAllister in the chest. VAR would check it and give no penalty. So in the end, it finished one apiece. Here's Jurgen Klopp after the game.
There's no higher skill than playing the best football you can play against Man City, causing City the problems we caused them today. I was not here in the press conference, but probably Pep saw it as well, that this was a different game to other games we played against them. Very often we won. It was counter-attack, quick rebap, like quick thinking, shots from distance. How we played through that midfield today, it was like, some of the best moments of my coaching career, to be honest, that we are able to do that against them. And you see a situation where nothing to do with football, but you see Luis Diaz against Walker, who is officially the fastest in the Premier League. Didn't they say that? Only reason, whatever. And Rodri. And when he gets out of that, it's absolutely incredible. So, like, the boys really wanted it. Really good performance, massive heart, sensational atmosphere. 1 point. Let's keep going.
So what does all that mean for the neutral? It's brilliant, isn't it? 10 matches are to go. Just 1 point separates the top three. Liverpool and Arsenal level at top. Manchester City, meanwhile, third. Stuart Robson joins us. Rob, we'll go to you in a minute. We'll talk about penalty decisions and other little things within the game in a moment. But just overall, this was great, wasn't it?
No, it was great. It was the kind of intensity that you expect from this league and other leagues. But one of the reasons it puts its hand up and said, you should watch us. Two magnificent teams. One team at full strength, pretty yes. much, and the other not. And I think that was, for me, the impressive thing. When we sat here during the week thinking about this game, I was thinking back to the Chelsea game that we all did, and Robbo did the commentary, the Carabao Cup final, how Liverpool were decimated, and yet they came through. This wasn't quite as bad, but it was still a patched-up Liverpool side, and you were sitting thinking, right, how are they going to cope against the best team in England and the best team in Europe? For 10 minutes, it was a struggle.
Yeah.
10 or 12 minutes, whatever it was. But then they're passing Liverpool, they're pressing Liverpool. Particularly in that second half, I was absolutely amazed at the ability to unruffle this Man City team. Almost every player. Rodri, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, John Stones, Kyle Walker, the lot of them. And that was Liverpool. Who probably had, what, five players, Stevie, that you would say are not regulars?
Yes,
five.
Yep.
And so from that perspective, I mean, we can talk about who deserved to win, who not. You've got to take your chances. Luis Diaz had some great chances. There was another one that Nunez put him in. He had a bad touch. They hit the post, obviously, City. But I've not seen City. Well, we've seen City this year. We've talked about them saying they're a bit more vulnerable defensively this year at times. And they have been. And we saw that today. Liverpool really got at them. But yeah. I was amazed Liverpool were able to do to City what they did with the personnel available to them.
Because you look at that defence and you text me before the game, Stevie, you were really worried
yes.
about Liverpool at the back.
Yeah, I was. I wondered whether Konsa was up to it. Obviously, Joe Gomez is really solid playing left back. And let's not forget, Conor Bradley's still a kid. You know, it almost seems like he's not, but he really is. And so that was the only thing I worried about. I looked at the middle of the park and I thought, I like the look of that.
Right.
And to Craig's point, I've never seen Man City's midfield become invisible for as long a period as they did in the second half. Yeah. I think there was a little period of 5 minutes around the 70th minute mark where the game actually seemed to slow down just for a couple of minutes, and then it went back to the 100 miles an hour. But I've never seen these guys, Ruddy in particular, disappearing from a football match. Haaland is 16 foot tall, and I forgot he was on the field. Phil Foden had his chance, but other than that, again, second half, you never saw him. And that was down to Liverpool. I mean, you talk about a culture. That's when you know there's a proper culture at a football team. When you've got five players playing who wouldn't normally in such a big game, but every single person did their job at the right time. The closing down was, it was perfection. Everybody was closing down together. Everything they did was together. When they sat off together. Everything was together. That's a culture. That just doesn't happen every now and again. When you have... The bottom line is, when you've got as many players who probably wouldn't start and you can perform like that, tells you what the whole club's like. Question is, what's it going to be like when Klopp goes?
Well, we'll find out at the end of the season. A lot of football to be played between now and then. Robert, what did you make of the game?
I thought it was a fantastic game. And as the guys have just said, Liverpool, I thought, did brilliantly. And it comes down to Klopp, but also the players on the field. Because the first 10 or 15 minutes, the way that Man City used Stones, he was playing at centre-back, but he kept on stepping into midfield. And at that point, Man City were dominating midfield. It meant De Bruyne could play higher up the field. Then Bernardo Silva could play higher up the field. So they're almost playing five men in attack, but they were still dominating that midfield area for the first 20 minutes. And then something clicked with Liverpool where Kelleher decided, we're going to go beyond that. If John Stones wants to play in midfield, we'll go beyond that. Nunes will start winning balls in the air. Diaz will run off the back of him. We'll get Conor Bradley to play higher up the field on the right-hand side to join in with Elliot and cause Ake a problem. And from that moment on, Manchester City never had control of the game again. So they exposed what John Stones was trying to do. And it happened again in the second half because there was too many spaces. As Craig has just said, too many spaces between Walker, who had to come narrow at times, between Akanji, who was playing as the main centre-half, and Ake, who was having to go out sometimes to the left or sometimes tuck in. And that was exposed time and time again by brilliant Liverpool play on the counter-attack, but also winning the ball back high up the field and playing through those spaces.
Conor Bradley got caught twice in the first 10 minutes high up the field. Mm. And City exploited, well, they exploited the space. They didn't have the end product. And you thought, oh boy, this could get a little messy. If he's trying to push on, they've already looked at that and went, right, we'll just stick it in behind there. And that's going to stretch them. But they remedied that scenario. But when we talk about tactics and we talk about all these things, one of the things I think got Liverpool on the front foot was Szoboszlai, Endo and McAllister, particularly McAllister and Endo, picking up second balls. Right? As Stuart said, when it went a little bit longer or when they were pressing Man City, and by the way, I've not seen Man City lump it as many times as they did today. But when they did try and go long or they tried to go into Haaland's feet, it was cut out by either the centre-backs or the three guys in the middle of the park. Mm. And then Liverpool just came on, you know, wave after wave, picking up the second balls. And I think that's why we saw Kovacic come on, because they had lost the middle of the park. They'd lost it long before Kovacic came on. Yep. So they did a marvel. And Endo, we talk about a guy who, at the start, was a little... Yeah. He has come on to a game. He doesn't do anything that's going to go, wow, that's bad. Everything he does is tidy. It's workmanlike. It's very efficient. And he lets others go and do what they're going to do. But, you know, honestly, from Liverpool... And Stevie's right. I was thinking this myself. I do not think there is another manager, including the guy in the other dugout, who could get as much out of this Liverpool or any side with the problems that they've got to play the biggest match with arguably the two biggest teams in Europe at the moment, two of the best teams in Europe, to play at home against City like that with these players, with this personnel, and be wave after wave after wave. I wouldn't say City were hanging on, but I tell you what they were doing at the end. Happy to waste time.
Most definitely. We saw that, try and slow the game down.
Throw-ins. Yeah. They were happy in the end because they had got a big, bloody nose.
A word on Endo, of course, because Caicedo was the main target. He went to Chelsea. Yep. Endo was nowhere near at the top of the list, yet they brought him in. As Craig said, you weren't sure at the start of the campaign.
No, well, I think whenever a player comes into a club, if you're there or you're a fan of that, you're looking at... How's his technique? Is he technical? Is he going to be silky? Is he going to be Alcantara, giving the old no-look passes and all that? But it just shows you that a real football team is made up of different pieces.
Right.
And he doesn't fit he doesn't fit the profile of one of the best teams in Europe that pass the ball around and play silky soccer. He doesn't fit that mode because there's nothing silky about this guy. But I'll tell you what, he doesn't miss a challenge. He picks up great spots. He makes great decisions. He keeps it simple. And without that, you don't get the whole performance. So Endo, to say he's not technically great would be doing him a disservice, but he's not close to somebody like De Bruyne. But I'll tell you what, he's just as important.
Robbo, as well as Endo, obviously, once again, Virgil van Dijk proved how important he is to this Liverpool side.
Yeah, he organised the team. He was good in the air. And as Stevie was saying, or Craig may have been saying, Man City at times, when they were being pressed high upfield, had to go longer. Now, that's where you want your centre-forward, Haaland, who probably only had two good touches in the game, to get in the way of Van Dijk, hold the play up, let other players come and join him. But Van Dijk didn't let him do that because time and time again, when the ball went 30, 40, 50 yards, for some reason, Van Dijk sees it and Haaland doesn't. And he was stronger than Haaland. There was only one run where Haaland went down the side of him and got his shot away. But even then, Van Dijk probably did enough. Mm. You know, he was a great leader. He read the game well. He got the other players around him. And even on the ball, Van Dijk's a very good passer of the ball and he started quite a lot of the Liverpool attack. So another good performance from a top-class captain.
Unfortunately, away from all of that, one of the big talking points from the game is, again, about the officials, about whether or not it should have been a penalty.
Shouldn't take long to talk
when
about
I saw it. This is it. I don't want to start with it. I want to talk about the game because it was a great game. Aye. And it was a shame. So this is what Jurgen Klopp had to say about it.
I tried to explain it to a colleague of yours, and she said, yeah, but because the high bar, they said, with the VAR and stuff like this, he was not surprised that it's not a penalty. So there's always an explanation. The only thing is, I would now think that in this room, everybody thinks, yeah, if he whistles a penalty, that would have been not a scandal. Let me say it like that. He hits him on the chest. Does he touch the ball before? Yes. Does that make any difference on any position of the pitch if your leg is that high? You can kick the ball before, and after that, the foot is here, and you go off. It's not a red card, obviously, but this is a clear foul. So. But I had to speak so often about it, and I really don't care. I'm already over it. It's absolutely fine. But I would love to get it, yeah. But nothing what I say, at least I learned that, will change that.
I wasn't sure at first until I saw... Well, I wasn't sure in real time, and that's the referee as well, and that can happen. Guess what? For the thousandth time, that's why we have what we have, the technology. When I saw the first replay, I said, they're going to give that. And then nothing changed my mind. And then I heard the NBC commentary, the VAR, who they have the VAR in their ears, and it just got me this one. It was just two players coming together.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Isn't that what normally...
It was a natural football uh-huh.
Isn't that
together.
What normally happens? Two players come together because one kicks the other.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a high boot. He doesn't play... I mean, he literally hardly plays. He plays the player, right, in the chest.
It follows through.
I have no idea how this wasn't given as a penalty. No idea what... There is no explanation. And they'll come up with some gobbledygook, which they've already done. But, you know, I think Jurgen Klopp's taken that remarkably well, considering what's right at stake here. You know, they've already had that decision. And, you know, this is not... Well, this is not just a Liverpool side of things. They've had that decision at Tottenham at the start of the season. Every team gets decisions,
yep,
for and against. But that horrendous VAR one, which was just factual, at Tottenham. And I think, bearing in mind we're at this stage of the season, his team have played so well with so many injured players and unavailable players against the best team in the country. And he seems to have taken that ever so well because, to me, how you can sit in a VAR room and not have seen somebody's kicked an opponent in the chest in the box is beyond me.
So what they've done is the VAR has refereed the time of the game, yeah, and how the effect of the penalty kick will be. That's what they're thinking. They're not
refereeing the last kick of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why they're not
matter,
giving it.
Does it? Yeah.
No, it shouldn't, but because there isn't, it is not possible that all they've done is got the blinkers on and looked at a challenge and said, is it a foul or not? Because it's impossible not to see it's a foul.
Robert, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, it's poor defending from Doku because he has to get to the bounce of the ball and clear it straight away, and the whistle would have blown, that would be the end of it. But he allowed it to bounce, and as soon as he allowed it to bounce, you knew there was going to be a problem for him, and he should have been going with his head, not his boot. The ball was that high, and it's a penalty. There's no doubt about it, and I think Stevie and Craig are absolutely right. The ref, or the VAR, knew that if he gave the penalty, it was going to be the match-winning penalty, and I think he bottled it. I have to say that he bottled it, because it's an out-and-out penalty. You can't argue with that.
You know,
it should have been a spot kick, and they should have won the game.
I can't understand this, how you could sit and go, whoa, this could be a nasty one. I mean, we have to deal in facts here. Yeah.
Well, the good thing is, Howard Webb will come out in a couple of weeks and tell us it was a penalty.
There'll be a recording.
So that'll be all right.
Yeah,
that'll
be usual, but, you know, they'll be the usual, well, we had won 3 weeks ago against Burnley.
Craig.
Oh, we had that.
Craig, let's... Yeah. Craig, let me tell you, I've been in the company of a couple of referees that have said things, oh, I wouldn't give it them because they're going to make life really difficult for me and I might get a lot of stick in the press. They've actually said that in my company, so I know that's how they think, and it's wrong, absolutely wrong.
What's happened to your headphones, Robbo?
You're right.
There we go.
There we go. So, can we talk about the goals? Was it brilliant quick thinking from Manchester City or bad defending from Liverpool?
No, it's absolutely brilliant, quick thinking from Man City. And no surprise, you know, I'm going to guess that wasn't the only set-piece corner they would work on. And there'll be a bit of leeway. And because you've got somebody with such a good football brain as De Bruyne on the ball, he decides whether it's puts his hand up for that one, whatever. And he saw the situation. And Stones was alive because he sees Ake leaning in. Defensively, I really don't think there's too much you can do, because at the end of the day, you're going to have to ask forwards to mark defenders, because that's just what happened.
Right.
And Nunez, who I'm pretty certain was Stones' man, doesn't have the defensive brain to think about what's going on in front of him. He's not watching Ake leaning McAllister on. He's not watching De Bruyne. You know, he's thinking about, well, let's get this rid of this corner so I can get up the other end. Mm-hmm. So, in some ways, you're taking a chance when you have a forward marking defenders. But as far as the actual goal, it's just great play.
Well, they've looked at that City, haven't they? All these teams do it now. Whether, you know, they have all these video sessions.
Of course, the set-piece coach as well.
Yeah, but they look at, the old set-piece coaches. Is anybody getting more credit this season than the set-piece coach? Arsenal and all these other teams. But they look at video and they say, right, who did Liverpool put at the near post? Who did they put there? Right, we can do this, we can do that, we can block him. And so they've it's brilliant from City. But I think from Liverpool perspective, I don't have an issue with what's happened. But if you're Jurgen Klopp, you say, all right, got us with that one. Right. This does not happen again. Right. Other teams may try it. So between now and end of the season, if we get caught out again doing it, somebody's going to get it. Yeah. We've been done once. Don't get done twice. It was brilliant, though.
Did Edison have to dive in meanwhile for the penalty, Robbo? Or is it just things happen too quickly?
No, he didn't have to dive in because he was never going to get there. So it's a poor pass by Ake. Of course it is. But once he realises that Nunez is going to get there first, he's just going to hold him up, because the touch from Nunez is always going to go towards the touchline. He's still got to try and get in from a really impossible angle. He should have stayed on his feet, held up Nunez. So there's two mistakes. The first one was by Ake. The second one, probably even just as bad, was by Edison. It was reckless, it was silly, and he didn't read the situation well enough. You know, he's a good enough goalkeeper and a good enough understander of football to realise he was never going to get to that ball first, so he's just going to hold his ground and make it difficult for Nunez to go past him. But by lashing out on it, it was always going to be a penalty as soon as that ball was played back.
Well, he didn't even with that, he could have, as Stuart said, he could have ushered them to the corner, but he took an almighty lash at it.
Which makes no sense.
It's a goalkeeper, right? Sometimes they don't realise, I think, how quick some of these players are.
Right. Yeah.
But the one thing that I think he could have done, he could have made a tackle instead. He could easily have made a slide tackle, and he would have had much more chance of getting there than taking a big swing at the ball. But give Nunez credit, he saw Ake passing it back before Ake had started the pass back, and he was onto it.
I think we've got to realise, goalkeepers don't understand how slow they are either.
Oh.
as well as not understanding how fast they are, the goalies think they're quicker than they are.
So we've talked a lot about Liverpool. What about Manchester City? Where did it go wrong? Why didn't we see them anywhere near their best today? Pep Guardiola, of course, brought off Kevin De Bruyne in the second half. The Belgium international clearly not happy. Pep addressed it after the match.
Kevin didn't look too happy to come off. How big a decision was it to bring him off?
No, he's happy. No problem at all. I like it. If he's upset, it's good. So, okay, decisions, because I know where we miss it, and we miss keep the ball, and we could not miss him. With him and Bernie and John and the other one, we could not have it. And after we did it better. So, but listen, Kevin is... What can I say for Kevin? We need it, and we need him, and it's really, really important. It's not for him, so he is in a difficult place to come to play, and he tried in the first half, who's incredibly involved in all the transitions, the shoots, and the corner, the deliver, and many things. We know it, but the moment I had the second half after goal concede, or we give them in that moment, so the game was not in our hands, and I wanted to make something like we can keep the game back to us a little bit. And this is the idea, no more than that. Sooner or later, in this stadium, you have 50, 20 minutes. You have to try as less as possible. That looks like a tsunami, like, oh my God, come for everywhere, you have the ball and everything. But after, when Mateo came in, we can make an extra passes that this is the target to play, that the first half, not because we didn't want it, it's because they are really, really strong in that pressing and contra-pressing, and aggressivity in this stadium is not easy, but never we give away the try to play. But with Mateo, with John, with Rodri, and Phil inside, have the quality to keep the ball like we didn't could keep it before, and we have our chances, they have our chances, and at the end of the game is what happened.
Robbo, does what you say make sense about the Kovacic De Bruyne sub?
Yes, to a certain degree, because, and he's absolutely right, in the first 20 minutes, in the first half also, Kevin De Bruyne was, and Man City were dominating midfield, Kevin De Bruyne can play in that role just in behind Haaland, and he can get on the ball, and he gives Endo a problem. Does Endo press, or does he drop off? But in the second half, when Liverpool were pressing much higher up the field, Manchester City couldn't get the ball to Kevin De Bruyne because they were being outnumbered and outplayed in midfield. So he becomes a luxury player, and that's why they took him off, and they put Kovacic in there. And I fully understand why he did that. It made them less effective. But again, I go back to when that happens, and it happened at Arsenal when Man City played there. When they went longer to get Kevin De Bruyne in the game, it had to go into Haaland and Haaland to Kevin De Bruyne, not the other way around. And again, Haaland, for me, didn't show up enough, didn't win enough balls that were played up to him, and didn't show enough. And if you're playing, usually it doesn't matter. But when the opposition are trying to dominate midfield and pressing you high up, you've got to bypass that and go into your centre forward. And he didn't do enough, which didn't allow Kevin De Bruyne to show his skills as well.
It was a domino effect for Man City in a bad way. What happened was, John Stones very early on, when City got off to a flyer, and De Bruyne did get in a lot of these positions in the first half, but three or four times Rodri played a little ball around the corner to him, and he's hit a bad ball. He's tried to put Haaland away, and he's hit a bad ball. His passing wasn't as good today. Yeah, he had a couple of shots in the corner. But what happened was, John Stones, who was trying to do what he's been doing whenever he's been fit, stepping in, very comfortable, him and Rodri, leaving Akanji in a back three. When Liverpool got a foothold in the game and started to really put that pressure on, that wave after wave of red, Stones had to go back and sit in the back four. And that meant De Bruyne had to come back and play, and everybody had to come back. So all of a sudden, he's not in that position, and all of a sudden, Endo doesn't have to worry about him as much, because the whole City side have been pushed back. I mean, how often do we talk about City being pushed back? Mm. Well, after 10 or 15 minutes, that's what Liverpool did. And so Stones effectively could only step out when they had the ball, which was less and less as the game went on. And that meant that De Bruyne became less effective. That meant the fullbacks couldn't push up. And that meant there was a bigger gap to Erling Haaland. And that, as that gap grew to Haaland, the balls into him weren't good, his touch wasn't very good, or somebody was picking up. So it was Liverpool's pressure that really pushed City back into a traditional back four, and it meant De Bruyne's, you know, influence in the game was limited.
And he could have been stubborn, you know. Pep could have been stubborn. He could have said, look, we'll ride this out. We've got good players with experienced players. We'll ride it out and we'll start passing the ball. But he figured out that, you know what? That's not happening.
Right.
It's just, we're just, today, the way the game's going, we're not going to be able to do that. I'm going to have to sacrifice somebody, and it's going to have to be Kevin De Bruyne, because I need somebody else in there who is going to defend and who has a better understanding of keeping a position. Because De Bruyne doesn't. You know, one of the reasons that he gets himself space is because he's able to drift around in different spots and get in between the back four and the middle. But when you don't have the ball, he becomes a liability. So he has to come off. And there's not a player alive with the ability of a Kevin De Bruyne who's going to be happy at getting taken off. So there's no surprise that he's not happy and he's complaining, but he'll figure out in the next couple of days that, you know what, for the good of the team, it was the right move.
This is not a disaster for City.
Well, no, that kind of takes us on to the title race discussion.
By a long stretch.
Arsenal probably the happiest of the sides in the fact that they obviously watched their two big opponents share the points today and what it means, as we mentioned, that Arsenal, top of the table, level on points to City. There is 1 point separating the top three. You can see Liverpool's odds have been trimmed. City have drifted slightly. Arsenal, meanwhile, at 12-5. City remain favourites. What do we learn about the title race today, Robbo?
That it's going to go right to the end. We've looked at the fixtures and looked at who they've got to play. There's a massive game coming up, I think, in a couple of weeks or after the international break. Manchester City against Arsenal. That's going to be an absolute massive game. We've also learnt that Liverpool, even with injuries, can still win most games from now to the end of the season. So they're going to be right up there. We've learnt that Arsenal are still going to beat most of the weaker sides. It's that game against Man City that will test Arsenal out. Are they good enough to win that game? If Arsenal win that game, I think they could go and win the title. But it's going to be very, very tight. I think both these sides today, I think it's a good result for Man City, because if they go and beat Arsenal, they could get to the top. But it's also a decent result for Liverpool not to lose when you've got a slightly weakened side.
Well, Arsenal did beat Man City at home and Liverpool at home. I think drew away at Liverpool.
Yes. Yep.
So they've been competitive against the big boys. I think one of the differences and one of the doubts I think both Stevie and I have had recently is, can Liverpool go all the way with the walking wounded? I think maybe that's answered, possibly answered some of that to say, hey, maybe they can.
Yeah.
Maybe they can.
Well, let's take a look at the schedule. I think it's fair to say,
I think Liverpool
have got the easiest schedule.
To me, Arsenal's looks the toughest. Might be wrong.
City's isn't great either, is it?
I actually think City's, if City beat Arsenal.
Yep.
I mean, Palace, Luton, Forest, Fulham.
Spurs are playing all three in three consecutive weeks. It's crazy.
Here's the thing. It's very difficult to sit here and be that clever and go, well, we'll beat them, we'll draw there, we'll do that. But the fact is that, you know what? You know the winner of the City-Arsenal game? They have to be favourites.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
You think so? What about Liverpool?
Of the three teams, I think Liverpool are more susceptible to drop points away from home. I think at home it's not a problem. I think away from home is where.
But look where you're Old Trafford. That takes.
Let's talk
about your point then. Old Trafford, Craven Cottage, West Ham, Villa Park, and then obviously the Merseyside derby to put in. I think out of those four, you'd look at Villa Park maybe and think that's the toughest, but rest you would take those as away games, wouldn't you?
The problem is, there's a reason we talk about experience, right? And as much as we're talking today how great, I mean, today was, have you ever seen Elliot playing a better game for Liverpool? He's not. I mean, Joe Gomez was great, Bradley was great, they're all great. But when you hear us talking about experience, the experience is when you go away to certain places where you're supposed to win and you get stuck. And generally, it's because, or if you've got so many young guys that don't have the experience of every single time they step on the field, the level is there. It's okay to play Man City, Anfield. Well, it's not easy, but it's okay to be up there against Man City when there's 60,000 people at Anfield and the veins are busting out your neck, the adrenaline's got the whole thing. When you're away from home, it's a different ball game. And so if they end up with 4 and 5 of the so-called squad players playing every time they go away from home, that's where the problem is. Not at home, it's away from home.
Looking at these games is... It's tough because... You know, you look at Liverpool last week. You know,
yeah, the Forest game.
The Forest game. A controversial late goal, Nunez. How controversial it was, whatever. It was a drop ball, blah, blah, blah. Late goal. You'd have thought Forest struggling, 3-4-0. You look at Arsenal yesterday at home, Brentford. They're having a tough season. Down near the relegation. You think, right, that's at home. That's 4 or 5. It doesn't always work out that way. So, who knows? We're, you know... Ake and Ederson, bad mistake. We're talking about mistakes, yeah, under pressure. We don't know what these numpties in black are going to do either, these referees. We saw that decision at the end that wasn't given today. We saw the drop ball last week at Nottingham Forest. How much it affected the goal, that's a different point. But dropping it to the wrong player. So anything can happen. But I think the difference for me is last year it was City and Arsenal, right? And as good as Arsenal were last year, and they got injuries at the end to Saliba, and I think right. Partey and one or two others were struggling, and they were tired because they had a smaller squad and they played a lot of games. But I don't think, honestly, they believed, Dan,
right,
that they were going to go all the way with City.
Do you think that's changed now?
I do, and I think it's changed for Liverpool too. Right. So I think we have three teams, one of which we know believes can win it because they have, they've done it, they've been there, they got the T-shirt, won the treble last year. But I think the other two believe that they can go all the way.
Yeah.
And I think mentally, they might not. Fatigue might, something might happen. But I think there is a belief, and you saw that in Liverpool today.
Yep.
Arsenal have taken City on. Arsenal have taken Liverpool on. Liverpool have taken City on. Nobody's taken a backward step thus far. And I think there's a great belief amongst the other two that City are gettable this year. Whether they do or not, I don't know.
How does this finish? What order, Robbo?
I'm going to go for... I'm going to go for Arsenal to win it. I'm going to go for Man City to be second, and I'm going to go for Liverpool to be third. But it's all going to be very tight, yeah, by a point each way, I think.
He's trying to get his ban lifted. He's trying to get his ban lifted at the Emirates.
Hey, it's brilliant for us, though, isn't it? It's fantastic. That's exactly what you want. You want a title race 10 to go. You could put an argument forward for any of these teams.
And it's quality football. Football. It's quality size. Don't forget Liverpool. Obviously, a lot of the players played. Okay, it was a layup for them against Sparta Prague in the end, but we didn't think it was going to be. Mm. So they've came through that as well on Thursday and performed like that again. So they're all performing well. I'm still edging towards Man City. Because until somebody topples them, I won't believe it, because the quality usually comes, the cream usually rises to the top. They weren't at the best today, but they usually, I think that's a bit of a kick up the backside, and I think that's what their manager will give them.
Of course, for now, attention turns to the FA Cup for Manchester City, as next weekend it's the quarterfinals. We'll have them all live on ESPN Plus on Saturday. Wolves against Coventry, and then it's City Newcastle, and then St Patrick's Day, March 17th on the Sunday, Chelsea against Leicester, followed by Old Trafford, Manchester United against Liverpool. Now, more Premier League talk to come in a moment as we reflect on that Spurs victory against Aston Villa. But first, let's join Kay and Shaka to reflect on a win for Real Madrid today.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Real Madrid took on Celta at the Bernabeu after back-to-back draws behind them. Bellingham suspended for this game, but Vinny Jr. would put them ahead in the 21st minute. It was initially a header from Rudiger. Vinny saw it over the line, but the delivery coming from that man, Xhaka, Luka Modric.
Luka Modric was key to everything about Real Madrid today, called on by Carlo Ancelotti, and again, delivered.
Two own goals would follow for Celta, but in amongst all that as well, Vinny Jr. got himself a yellow after he was professionally fouled by Oscar Mingueza. Vinny retaliating there, perhaps needlessly, although he was targeted throughout the game. And then late on, just to put a bow on it all, Arda Güler with his first La Liga goal.
94th minute, 3-0 up, you take a quick free kick. Arda Güler, despite his injuries and setbacks, took this goal so wonderfully well with his weaker foot. No sign of any nerves.
And this is what it means in La Liga's table. Real Madrid still top, 69 points now, 7 points ahead of Girona in second with the same amount of games played. It is Barcelona and Atleti behind them in third and fourth, respectively. At the bottom end of the table, Celta do stay 2 points outside of the bottom three, but they will need to start winning some games to make sure they can put some more distance between themselves and the relegation zone in the games that are remaining in La Liga.
Great stuff, guys. Thank you very much. Back to the Premier League. The early game at Villa Park, Aston Villa taking on the Spurs. It'd be pretty much over within 10 minutes here, because we'll see James Maddison here make it 1-0.
What a ball. I mean, the defenders are not in bad positions. The ball is just so good, and Maddison makes a beautiful run.
Spurs hadn't offered too much going attack, really, before that. However, they got a taste of scoring goals and get another here through Brennan Johnson.
Yeah, Villa tried to overplay the back. I think between Konsa and Tielemans got caught in the ball, and Brennan Johnson finished it.
Steve, you said this was soft.
It's just weird, you know. I mean, 2 or 3 yards away, he's decided, again, that a doggy's getting it. I mean, basically. I mean, that's the Sunday league challenge.
Yeah.
And he knows. From when he did it, he never said a word.
And then it would be 2-0 right up until the 91st minute where Son gets in on the act.
Yeah, but I mean, even before the red card from again, it was pretty much all Tottenham.
And Timo Werner with a nice finish here for a fourth. This, of course, very much a significant victory for Spurs against their rivals to play in the Champions League next season. A 4-0 victory for Postecoglou's side. Let's take a look at what that means in the table. They've closed the gap to 2 points on Villa. They also have a game in hand and a better goal difference as well, if that comes into play. What a statement.
Well, if you didn't know better, you'd have thought, and we talked about Unai Emery this week in glowing terms, you know, when we were looking at who would get the Man United job if Ten Hag was to be sacked, saying he would be one of the guys. And that hasn't changed, but he had a bad day at the office. He had a really bad day at the office. For some reason, he played a back five.
Right.
He played Cash, Konsa, Longley, Pau Torres and Digne. And if you didn't know any better, you said, right, he's trying not to lose this because they've got a gap to Tottenham. They're in the top four and he's thinking, let's not lose this. Well, I don't think he'll be doing that again in a hurry because they were on the back foot from the start. And although the chances in the first half, actually Villa had the better of the chances, it was all Tottenham possession. And I was so disappointed with Aston Villa being at home, what they offered today. Before they went down to 10 men, the way that Unai Emery set his team up, it just didn't work. For Tottenham, they didn't change anything. They didn't change anything.
Yeah.
They came, they outplayed their opposition, they outpassed their opposition. And eventually, when they started getting Maddison in the game a bit more, they started to open Aston Villa up. We talked about Liverpool at the start of the show and how good they were in the middle of the park. Papi Sarr and Bissouma picked every ball up in there. They picked every ball up and they just dictated the play. The Sun was running in behind. It was impressive. Van de Ven was excellent. Again, they lost him to injury. Yeah. So Dragosin had to come on. They had to make some changes. But yeah, I mean, another statement from Tottenham. The top four now, I mean, it's not going to go like this, but it's in their hands.
Yes.
It's a pretty good position to be in.
But the problem is they're running. Do we have their running? Let's just show you that, because we saw earlier on in the show, They have got to meet City, Arsenal and Liverpool all before the end of the season, all before quite a run at the end of April. Obviously, everything around that, when you compare it to that, that's manageable, although there are St James's before that. Those four games could be decisive as to whether or not they will finish in that Champions League spot.
Yeah, well, the only thing you know is they're going to go for it.
Yep.
Which I think is one of the reasons that Unai Emery set his team up the way he did. And you've got to be very careful. You know, if I'm playing for Tottenham, I know exactly, regardless of whether we're at home or we're away, what we're trying to do, what we're about. We don't change it. This is who we are. And we play our football. And players love that. And Unai Emery clearly has given his team the wrong message.
Is everyone starts overthinking?
Absolutely, yeah. You've got to be, when you're coaching, you've got to be very careful because generally you're going, right, this is what we do, this is where we are, we want to get it away, we want to get him involved in the game, we want to get after them, we're at home, get this crowd going, let's go after them. He clearly has said, look, and he's trying to be too clever, let's wait till they make a mistake. Let's not open it up. If we open it up, maybe they could hurt us. And his team's gone out and just try to be safe in numbers and right. Sit behind the bot. You can't do that. And certainly, Villa can't do that. Some teams are capable of switching. Villa clearly aren't. And Tottenham just took advantage of
it. It's hard enough to play a high-line offside game when you've got a back four. You've got to be so well-drilled. Like the old Arsenal side were back in the 80s and 90s when George Graham was there. 1-0 to the Arsenal. You know, that back four with Tony Adams and Lee Dixon and Winterburn, they stepped up, they dropped off, they were in tandem. A lot of teams, Liverpool do it, City do it, Villa do it, Tottenham do it. When you do it with a back four, the full-backs are generally pushed on, so you have two centre-backs that are dictating stepping up. When you've got three in there that don't play together, the communication is just going to be horrendous. So you're going to find those gaps, and that's how it was. But listen, you know, I think some Tottenham fans, well, we need to get in the top four. I don't think they realise how far they've come.
Right.
I really don't. I mean, if they don't get in the top four, I can see it now. I'll be like, oh, we blew it, we did this. I don't think they've realised how good they've got it at the moment. Most of them probably do. But the way, when you buy a ticket to go and watch this team, and they're not the only team, but we're gauging this on where they've come from. I mean, we all used to watch them with a blindfold on,
desperate.
Like most people. They were absolutely desperate. Mm-hmm. They were borderline unwatchable under at least two or three of the last managers. Home or away, you buy a ticket, you get entertained.
Most definitely.
And so that's at least something. This, a manager knows what he wants. And the players know the manager knows what he wants. And so that makes it at least a little simpler. Tottenham were excellent. Villa had a very, very bad day at the office.
Villa, by the way, still have to play Liverpool, Arsenal and City as well between now and the end of the season. According to the bar, we just put Manchester United on there just for you, Craig. Look, sitting six.
They're still hanging on. I mean, yeah.
Well, it was a bad result for them, wasn't it, United?
Spurs favourites. Is that fair?
Well, we're just showing the run-in, which you might say. I don't know. Look, Villa, to me, recently, I've been a little bit... a bit like Brighton this year in a sense where, you know, we talk about De Zerbi and they've really thrown up some weird results that have gone against them. Villa have done that a little bit recently as well. You know, we think about the Chelsea game in the FA Cup that we did at Villa Park. They were dreadful. Chelsea are not exactly hot stuff these days, and they went up there and just battered them. And there's been at least maybe two, three, four games like that where you go, I think, maybe Newcastle was another one at home. I think it was the first time they had lost at home this season. But it's starting to creep in, and I think that's maybe why he's starting to make some changes. You see managers, when they start getting to the old panic stages towards the end of the season, a couple of bad results or a couple of bad performances, right, what can I do? I'm going to make some changes. And it actually has an adverse effect on what they're trying to do.
Have you got City, Spurs or Villa?
I'm going to go Spurs.
Yeah.
Just for the very reason Craig's saying. Tottenham players know exactly what they're doing. Villa seems as though they could get confused. It's one thing to be praised all the time for being this tactical genius.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, when you know what you're doing, if you don't get it over to the players properly, they become unsure of what they're doing. And I think that's what you saw today.
Plenty more reflections of what we saw this weekend on the latest edition of Extra Time. Robbo will be back with us as well to answer your questions. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Brew. And that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Stuart Robson will be returning with his wonderful headphones alongside Craig and Stevie to answer your questions on Extra Time, which is coming up now. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig and Stevie here. How are you, Stephen?
Oh, marvellous.
Lovely, good. Stuart Robson's up late.
Very late.
Good. Excellent.
It's not that late. It's 11 o'clock.
Oh, 10 o'clock, isn't it? Because our clock... Because our clocks went forward.
It's a
bit late for Robbo, though.
Yeah, well, you know, he's...
After his American adventure. And did you get back all right, Robbo, as a jet lag?
I got back very nicely. Thank you, Dan. It was a pleasure to be with you all over in America.
Wow.
It really was an absolute pleasure. Even when you paid for the bill, half the bill, when you moaned about it, that was good
I didn't say I have to pay for Ali and
Kate. You know he was lying. You know he was lying, Stuart, wasn't it?
What?
He said it was a pleasure to be with us.
Well, you weren't here.
No, exactly.
That's it.
Why it was a pleasure.
Maybe it was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure not to be here.
For Stevie, how angry were you when Doku kicked McAllister with a high boot right in the chest in the penalty area, no penalty was given?
At the time, I've got to tell you, you know what I'm like?
I didn't get a phone call.
I've never been as calm.
Right.
And even when that decision, I was still calm. Because I was kind of flabbergasted how much they dominated the game.
Right.
And I sort of accepted it. Well, wasn't happy about it, but under normal circumstances, I would have been going bananas. But the longer it goes now, the more I think about it, the angrier I'm starting to get about it.
Oh, no, so if I like...
But at the time...
10 o'clock tonight?
At the time, I was actually very... During the show, Craig was saying when he saw it the first time, he wasn't sure, and I was exactly the same. Because I thought it was Doku's shoulder that maybe went into him, so I thought, you know...
Right.
But then when you see the replay... And it's his studs in his chest. It's like, it's just, it was, I guess it was so bad.
Yeah, it's just
it,
the new
never
you.
Resonated.
Is this the new you?
Yeah.
You're not going to shout.
I wouldn't think so.
You know, no shouting and screaming at TVs and screaming at managers giving out instructions in the technical area.
I said to him, how was your day? And he goes, you know what? I had some lovely potatoes today. You're well excited about your potatoes.
I said months and times.
You've been trying to put them out.
Well, that's what makes the world go round, isn't it? For him.
Potatoes.
I really enjoyed it. I had munch and potatoes for my lunch.
Here's a question for you.
I really enjoyed it.
Here's a question for you.
Some beetroot.
All right, yeah. Have you ever, because you know, we know you eat a lot of mash, amongst other things.
I don't.
What do you mean you don't?
I don't. I've tried to kibosh it.
I'm trying to get rid of potatoes from.
I'm not anywhere close to what I used to.
What, carbohydrates?
No, just potatoes in general.
Have you ever made mashed potatoes?
Yes.
Oh.
Not very often.
Right.
You've made them. So you peeled them, you boiled them, you mashed them, you buttered them.
Yes. Oh, I've got you when Ella's not here.
She leaves. No, she cooks them for you.
Not the tatties.
Oh, he's got to do tatties.
No, no. I've got to do tatties.
I've got to do the tatties. Yeah, the mince and the turnip and everyone else is in the freezer.
All right.
Well. The tatties I've got to do myself.
What did you have for lunch, Robbo?
What did I have for lunch? I actually went out for lunch today.
Oh.
And we had a nice bit of roast chicken, actually.
Oh, beautiful, Robbo.
It's Mother's Day, of course, in England.
Oh, that's Mother's right. Day. That's true.
God, where's Mother's Day?
Why'd you take her out? She's not your mum.
I'm the same.
Did you go as a family, Robbo?
We went as a family, yes. You know how it is, Dan.
Well, you never said that.
One big family, everybody together.
Everyone's
nice,
happy.
Nice, quiet time. No, no kids messing around. Then, no. Nothing like that.
You picked up the bill, I assume?
Well, if you were here, I'd have halved it with you. But as you weren't here, I paid it all myself.
Oh, there you are. What a man. Who's happier with the point, Robbo, Klopp or Guardiola?
On the evidence of the game and the way the game was played, I think Guardiola will be happy with the point. I think they were outplayed, as Stevie just said. Liverpool were excellent. They deserved probably to win the game. They deserved to get a penalty late on. So Pep Guardiola's got another chance, and he's got a big game against Arsenal in a couple of games' time. So it's not much of a loss for Man City. So I think he'll be the more pleased of the two.
We're not doing one of these ref watches tomorrow, are we? Clattenburg on or what?
No, what's the point? What's he going to say? That's going to
all right, all right. Don't have a go at me. I just asked.
Well, do you want him on?
No, I don't care. Who comes on? I don't care.
Why'd you bring it up?
Well, your opening statement meant that you cared because you were assuming we were going to bring him on. So you obviously cared.
No, I was only asking the question.
I don't know about that.
Chelsea Newcastle tomorrow. Yeah. That's good.
You
might be a mashed potato maker, but you're not a mind reader.
Stevie, rate the Endo signing 1 to 10.
I have to be honest, after the first couple of games, I was a little sceptical because of what I said the show about technically and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, the guy in the last, four or five games has just gotten better and better. So, on the evidence of today, at least an 8, maybe a 9.
Yeah.
Gravenberg will be next.
Oh, Gravenberg.
Yeah, he'll be the next.
He's another one.
So if he can get him to do the things I'm assuming he was supposed to do, then...
Yes.
Then Klopp is a genius.
Stevie, what exactly is there about Liverpool at Anfield? Maybe the atmosphere has something, because this was metal football we just witnessed from a team.
Heavy metal.
Yes, I know, but he forgot to say the heavy.
I think last week I described it as, you know, when it gets a hold of you.
Yeah.
It's like being on a magic carpet. But the truth is, things like that, like the atmosphere at Anfield, are impossible to figure out. It's just a phenomenon that is. And if anybody ever figures out the recipe, I'm sure everybody would try.
It's a record crowd, wasn't it, today? For a home match?
Yep. What, 59,000, something like that?
What's it like being on a magic carpet?
Well, you're off the ground. You're off the ground for the start.
And you're flying.
And I'm scared of height, so mine's is not too high.
You're scared of a lot of things, Stevie.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not.
Dogs? It's,
dogs, water, and...
Water.
And magic carpets.
Scared the dogs.
Yeah.
Hey, does he actually, when he comes around mine, he's like a bit...
Yeah.
A bit standoffy.
Yeah, bro, I don't...
Have you seen a bear yet this year?
Brody.
No. I
saw one in my neighbourhood the other day, and one of the neighbours' driveways.
Right.
Just walks across the road when I was driving up.
Right.
Big old...
Okay.
Big old bruiser.
Okay. What's that got to do with anything?
Oh, he's scared of bears, isn't he?
Scared of, I see.
You know what's it got to do with anything?
What do you mean? What were you talking about? What you scared of when you brought up bears?
Oh, are you not scared of bears?
I don't count them. I don't live.
You know what?
I don't have them around our
place. Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
There's been a bear where you live before.
I've never seen a bear where I live.
There's been a bear.
What are you telling me? If there's been a bear, there's never been a bear around my house.
You live in an area. Shall we see it?
Yeah, you can say wherever you want.
No, I don't like talking about it.
He just brought it up.
No, I don't like bringing up where people live.
Okay, right, okay.
Just in case there's somebody psychological problems that watch this show. And then
don't give his address.
I'll get blamed for them finding your house and stabbing you to death. Right.
Psychological profiler.
And if you want his address, I'll give it out at the end of the show.
But I've never had one around my house. It's been
How do you know?
Town.
How do you know?
I haven't seen it.
They might have been during the night.
A little visit. Walking around. See what's going on? Yeah. Saw Josh, went the other way. Right, Robbo, what's going on? What's happening? For the boys, Arsenal sit atop the Premier League going into the international break and come back to play City on March 31st. Do they have a realistic chance of going into City and snatching 3 points?
Hold on, when's the international break? Do we know?
I think it's the weekend before, isn't it?
Okay, so get back on the vacation thing on the computer again.
We'll be off.
Horrible.
Yeah, go on, Rob.
Horrible.
Okay, after this weekend. So this weekend and then next weekend's internationals. So FA Cup this weekend.
No, it's not. Oh, yeah, this weekend coming.
Yeah, FA Cup this weekend.
So 2 weeks.
Yes.
13 days.
Yeah, there we go. Robbo, how are you? Did you get the question?
I'm very good, yes. And you were asking me about Arsenal, were you? Have they got a chance against Man City? Well, they beat them in the Community Shield, albeit a pre-season friendly to a certain degree. They won that on penalties. And they played very well against Man City at home and won that game as well. So the way they're playing at the moment, the speed of their counter-attacking, the way they press the ball, as Liverpool did against Man City today, there's every chance that Arsenal could put in a really good performance against Man City and cause them lots of problems. I would still say Man City are the favourites for the game, but it's a massive game for both teams. The team that loses that, I don't think will win the league. The team that wins it has got every opportunity. So it's a big game. And I think Arsenal will cause Man City problems, particularly on the counter-attack.
Stevie, we've often seen the Bernabeu boo and whistle their own team when they're playing poorly. Have you ever experienced something similar at Anfield, or are their standards just not the same?
No, I've never experienced that.
No.
No. Nope.
Just going to keep looking at you.
I'm just going to keep
saying no. With the Oscars tonight, only feels right. Will you watch the Oscars?
No.
No? No. Robbo, will you stay up and watch it?
No.
No.
Couldn't give a stuff.
Oppenheimer's going to win.
I've no idea what that is.
It's a movie.
Well done.
There you go. About the H-bomb and about the war and everything that happened.
Is it a good movie?
It's a long movie. It's 3 hours.
A bit like the Irish.
Could have trimmed it down to 90 minutes easily.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be watching that. Yeah.
Certainly sent me to sleep on the plane going back.
Oh, did you watch it on the plane, did you, Robbo?
I did, yes.
It's long.
He acted it very well, Cillian Murphy, the Irishman.
Yep. But, yeah, he's going to win best.
It was
best
a long
actor,
film.
Yep.
Who wants to watch that, though? There's a bunch of actors and actresses just going along to pontificate.
I believe it's on ABC, Craig.
Oh, we're watching it. I'll be on my show. I said, what time? Oh, I do say.
I don't want to
watch the Oscars. Watch that bloody thing, honestly.
Hey, why don't you get Cheryl and Heidi and come round to my house and watch it?
Oh, yeah.
Aye.
It'll cook you some potatoes.
I've got some left over.
I'll come in the magic.
Right, what are we doing? Right. With the Oscars tonight, only feels fair to say, who are the best on-pitch actors you've ever played with or against?
Oh, Ronnie Rosenthal.
Oh, really?
Oh. We signed Ronnie Rosenthal.
Yes.
With 1990. Yeah, 1990. And the first game at Anfield, he went for a ball, knocked it past somebody, and they gave him one of them. They went like that, with a little fleck on his shoulder, right?
Okay.
And he hit the deck like a two-ton truck had hit. And not only did we, the players, go like that, what are you doing? Right. The crowd was going, what's he doing? The whole place was like, what? What is that? And obviously that was, of course, before it became commonplace.
Yes.
Everybody started diving all over the shot and referees giving aye. And Ronnie Moran gave him one of them when we came off at half time. And he went, we don't do that here, son.
Oh.
And Ronnie's like, what? He can understand what the problem was. Honestly, it was mental. What are you doing?
What about you? No? Robbo, anyone spring to mind?
Remember.
Well, the one that Stevie would have played with, Charlie Nicholas, when he came to Arsenal, he went down rather easily and threw himself to the ground and won a couple of penalties for us early on in his Arsenal career. So, yeah, he was a good actor on the pitch.
For Stevie and Craig, today is National Bagpipes Day.
Is it?
Yeah. As Scotsman, do you guys play that instrument? Are you fans of the bagpipes?
Oh, God, aye.
You're a fan of the bagpipes?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what would you put on, like on the way home tonight? Best of...
No. No, whenever they come on, it's just giving you a feeling.
What sort of
thing? I don't go home and put a record on or stick a tape on or go on YouTube.
You start doing that Scottish dancing about his house.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah?
Fantastic.
You know what, Hamden, before you... I presume they still do it. Before you play in an international match, particularly the big one there. I don't know how many would be in those bands.
100.
50, 100.
Well, so the whole lot...
Marching
so
up and down.
So you got your pipers and your drummers.
Okay.
100 of them playing bagpipes.
Must be cool.
And the drums going.
Before the start of the game, get everyone going.
It's fantastic.
There you are. Did you have bagpipes at your golf holiday?
Well, I don't have bagpipes. They have that particular hotel, the guy plays the bagpipes every night.
Wow.
At a certain time. Which is quite common at some hotels, you know.
Is it
I
really?
I don't know why.
Oh.
Do it in Scottsdale at one of them as well. One night I was playing, we were playing a little bit later, and I heard them play.
Yes.
Which tickled the boys.
Yeah. It's red, like, most, not all, most Scottish weddings will have a piper.
No, I understand.
Who pipe people in after.
Yes, but going to a random golf holiday in Alabama and someone's playing the bagpipes outside, that seems quite random.
It was a big Scottish fraternity.
They do that?
They do that a lot, aren't
they?
Yeah, a lot of places. A lot of different golf clubs.
Really?
Aye.
Wow, I've never heard of that phenomenon.
What you need to understand as well is, I've never tried, I've never tried once. They are supremely difficult to play.
Right.
I mean, like...
Your lungs. Jeez.
Off the charts.
Robbo, I imagine your opinion on bagpipes may differ.
Yeah, absolutely. As an Englishman, that's the one sound you don't really like, particularly when England are playing Scotland in either rugby or football. And Craig said, I did know someone that could play the bagpipes. It was very, very difficult, and he had to have very big lungs and strong lungs to play it.
Ooh.
So, not easy.
There we are.
Strong lungs? Oh, yeah.
Strong lungs? Oh, yeah, that's it. Lovely, thank you very much. Enjoy the Oscars tonight, everybody.
Where are they?
We'll be
ABC.
We'll be back tomorrow. It is Chelsea against Newcastle, which I imagine will dominate our conversation.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Time for some bonus material. Before the Real Madrid game, Shaka K discussed likes of Vinicius Jr. and Bellingham.
As we mentioned, they are without Jude Bellingham because after that was a known goal, after the whistle had been given, he said some choice words to the referee. It got him suspended for the next two games due to a red card. He said it's difficult to talk about because there's appeals going on. All I can say is what happened with the referee's decision to blow the whistle. He's human and so am I. I didn't say anything offensive. I feel like at times, because I'm new, they want to make an example of me, which I'm cool with. I have to take responsibility for my actions. I think two games is a bit ridiculous, but if I have to miss those two games, I'll support the team from the stands. And we always see the team supporting him as well whenever he isn't on the pitch. But Jules, what did you make of this moment where the referee had blown the whistle here and so this goal didn't end up standing?
So I agree with what Shaka said earlier. I mean, the referee warned, I think warned is the right word, the Real Madrid players and the Valencia players that after the corner, it would be the end of the game, that for him, all these 7 minutes of added time, and by then we were more than 7 minutes, by the way, had just gone. So it would be the corner, and after that he would blow his whistle. It's true that instead of blowing the whistle once Mamardashvili has punched the ball, he let a few more seconds play, which he shouldn't have. But then he blows his whistle before the cross from Brahim towards Bellingham, before the header, before the ball bounces into the goal. So I can understand the frustration. It can't be nice. But we've seen similar scenes happening very often. I said it the other day to Gab, but I was at the Arsenal-Tottenham women's game the same weekend, the following day. And just before halftime, Arsenal are on the edge of the box about to shoot, and the referee blew her whistle then, and that was it. It was halftime. So it's just not in that game. It happens regularly. it's a shame for Real Madrid, of course, but I think the referee had decided this was the way, and yeah, maybe he could have blown his whistle a couple of seconds earlier, but he was still way before the cross and the header, so I've got no issue with that. I can understand Bellingham's frustration, and where I've got an issue with is, yes, he uses the F word, which is obviously not appropriate, but it's not at the referee, it's more at the situation, almost like you would talk to yourself about it. So considering it's not directly at the referee, I think the two-match ban is quite harsh.
I'll use a different F word. He basically said, it's a flipping goal, but they don't like the way he said it to them, but now it's become almost iconic in the Spanish press because they keep referring to it as the flipping goal.
It's, and listen, I once again, I'm in total agreement with Jules here. I thought the referee could have handled the situation better, blowing the whistle moments earlier. That avoids all this melee post-game. And then, to your point, Kay, what Jude Bellingham says isn't insulting, isn't disrespectful. He's making a point at a very emotional time in well, I want to say the game, but obviously the game is over. But emotions are running high. So I totally sympathize. I got the feeling that it was more the referee kind of getting a little bit fed up with the number of Real Madrid players that were around him, obviously protesting. No real surprise there. And just as he's getting ready to book somebody, all of a sudden Jude Bellingham comes running in, screaming at the top of his voice. So it's less about Jude Bellingham and what he said, but more wrong place, wrong time. You know, that being said, obviously a lot more has come out as a result of that about Jude Bellingham and referees and how they haven't taken overly kindly to some of the things he says and does in the park, which I don't see. I couldn't disagree with more. I just thought that on this occasion, again, I totally understand Jude Bellingham's reaction. Once he does get the red card, the suspension is going to stand up, though.
He's going to have to mind his language. Although David Beckham found out himself when he used Spanish, that didn't work either. Front page of Diario AS today is Ancelotti de la cara por Vinicius. He's showing face for Vinny, basically standing up for Vinicius Jr. because Ancelotti said he's never seen a player who's been persecuted like Vinicius. He's kicked, he's whistled, he's insulted. And what does he do? He scores goals and provides assists. And then I'm supposed to talk to him about his attitude? No. Everyone should change their attitude regarding Vinny. Against Rayo, he got karate chopped in the head and there wasn't even a card. Now everyone is asking for a red card for the push against Leipzig. We're just taking a look back at that moment as well, because obviously that was one of the standout moments in terms of controversy of this game, Jules. What do you make of all this situation with Vinny Jr.?
I think we all agree it's a red card. I mean, I understand Carlo's point about defending Vinny, of course, but there's two different things here. I think Vinny needs to be defended at times, and yet it can't be nice, the environment that he has to settle with around games, during games, away especially, not so much at home, of course, but away especially. This is one side of it, of course, and Carlo is 100% right on everything he said in that press conference about Vinny. The red card is a different story. The red card has got nothing to do with anything that Carlo has just said in the quote that you read out. The red card is Vinny's reaction, bad reaction, really bad reaction, on first shoving Orban when there was no need for at all, and then pushing him on the neck like he did, and that was a red card, 100%. So I can understand Carlo's point about, you know, what Vinicius is going through a lot of the time away from home, which can't be nice at all, we have to be honest here. But the red card is a very different story. What happened to Leipzig was not the same context, environment, situation at all. That was on Vinny's, simply on Vinny. And I think Carlo could easily have said, in that moment against Willy Orban, he should not have reacted like that. However, what we see, what we've been seeing now for month and month and month, especially in La Liga away from home, this is a different story. And then we have to defend Vinny. But don't defend Vinny for what he did against Orban, because that is not right.
I didn't think it was a red card. Watching the game live, I'm with Jules in that the push in the back was just nothing. When I say nothing, I don't understand what prompts it. Maybe it's just a frustration around how poor Real Madrid were. But that push in the back just made absolutely no sense. From there, and watching it live, and I know the slow motion replays don't necessarily do this justice. I think he goes to push Orban in the chest and his hand slide up and contact his mirror the neck. Absolutely. But again, looking at it real time, in real speed, I didn't think it warranted a straight red. The thing with Vinicius Jr. is, for as incredible a talent he is, players and fans recognize that they can get under his skin a little bit by just antagonizing him, and that they can invoke a reaction. And that's what you saw. And while I think Vinicius has gotten a lot better in managing those circumstances, you still see these flashpoints every now and then. So until they are well and truly behind him, players will continue to antagonize. And on this occasion, again, with the shove in the back, it wasn't about Leipzig or Orban or anybody else antagonizing Vinicius Jr. I think that was just born out of a frustration about how poor Real Madrid were, which again kind of speaks to Vinicius Jr. and kind of getting into his own head and overreacting at times when it simply isn't warranted.
Yeah, OK. Well, we'll see how things turn out today. And if Celta do target him, they need to be targeting survival this season. As it stands, they are outside of the bottom three. They had a very important win last week against Almeria, who are still winless thus far in La Liga. Oscar Mingueza, the scorer on the day, he's back in the 11 as well. Iago Aspas is back from suspension. That was card accumulation for him. But it's Jorgen Strand Larsen with 9 goals this season who's scoring a lot of it. But from Rafa Benitez, a nice 4-4-2 today, Shaka.
Yeah, and a simple, straightforward formation. Again, we're talking about a Celta team. Well, they said fourth bottom, just 2 points outside the bottom three. I'm not sure when you look at your remaining fixtures if you circle the Bernabeu as a place you go and get points. But it's one that you try to frustrate and ask Larsen and Aspas to take chances if and when they do come.
So we'll take a look at how Celta do today. It's not usually easy for them. They've not beaten Real Madrid since May of 2014. We've got Athletic Club against Mallorca coming up. It is the Copa del Rey showdown, Saturday, April 6th, 4 p.m. Eastern. Be sure to be with us for that on ESPN+. OK, let's get you some more La Liga action from the weekend. This one played early on Friday. Barcelona taking on Mallorca. Xavi watching from the suites because he was suspended for the game. We're going to pick up the action here around the 20th minute mark. Now, Rafinha would get taken down inside the box, but initially no foul was called.
Referee goes to VAR, and while Rafinha's kind of collapse seems a little dramatic, that's a foul. That's a penalty.
And so it would be Ilkay Gundogan who steps up, but it is stopped. Still 0-0.
Yeah, good save here of the save, and then it's Kyle Larin who's following in and does really well just ahead of Lamine Yamal.
And then speaking of that man, Lamine Yamal, what about this? Let's just remind you that he is still only 16 years old, and this is a golazo.
I mean, he just seems to get so much better. For all the waves that he created when he first arrived, he has just grown in confidence, glides over the park, and this becoming a little bit of a signature move of his, just dropping inside and finding that far corner.
And so next up for Barcelona, it is Napoli in Champions League action. As we take a look at the odds, it is currently 1-1 as it stands. What are you expecting to see in this clash in Europe, Jules?
I don't know, really. I don't think anybody knows, because those teams, to be fair, have been quite unpredictable this season. We've seen a better Napoli, for sure, since the new manager Calzona has arrived, Ciccio Calzona. Remember the first leg, he only had one training session the day before. And it was always going to be difficult in that first leg for him to implement his ideas, even if they are the same ideas as Spalletti's before him, because he was his assistant. But still, only one training session is not, especially before a game like that, it's not enough. 3 weeks down the line, it's better. We saw that against Juventus, for example, where they were excellent last weekend. On Friday night, and we talked about it on the FC show on Friday night, not as good against Torino, who are a difficult team to play against because it's all a bit intense and chaotic. But it would be a better Napoli side than the one we saw 3 weeks ago. And on the other hand, this Barca team can't be as good, obviously, because De Jong and Pedri have gone injured since that first leg, for example. But when you've got Lamine Yamal in that kind of form against Marco Rui or Oliveira, whoever's going to play left back for Napoli on the night, it could be where the game is won for Barcelona. So it would be great simply for the fact that we don't really know what to expect and how good those two teams will be or could be on the night.
Yeah, obviously, it's going to be one to watch. But we were looking what we would get from Atleti against Cadiz with their next game coming up in the Champions League against Inter. It definitely wasn't the day of Diego Simeone's men. This is the first goal from Juanmi.
Ruben Soberino with the ball in and Juanmi with the good header, easy header.
Atleti wanted a foul here on the second goal. It would be that man again, Juanmi.
Not a foul. I think Gabriel Paulista just makes an absolute mess of that header, Juanmi falling in. And comfortable finish. There's a little shove in the back there, but I thought, and you can usually tell from the reaction of the defender, nothing to it. You understand Simeone's disappointment, but I just thought it was a really poor Atleti on the day.
Vital points for Cadiz, but así es imposible. This way it's impossible, basically, with Inter coming up, and we don't need to tell you how well Inter have been faring this season. Top of the Serie A and absolutely frying right now. When it comes to Atleti, same cannot be said for them in their last 9 matches. Look at this, just 2 wins in all of that time. Let's take a look at the odds for that game. Inter already with the 1-0 lead on aggregate. Big favourites to advance as well. Remember, they went all the way to the final last year. Jules, in this game, any hope for Atleti?
I mean, you have to say on this, just simply on current form from the two teams, there's no match. Really, you've mentioned Atletico and how bad they've been, especially away from home. That has to be noticed. At home, it's a bit different, but away from home, they've lost half of the La Liga game so far. So it's terrible. And for Inter, 13 wins in a row, it's just incredible, unbeatable. I watched them yesterday again against Bologna, which was a tough game away from home. And they were still so solid. They rotated again. It was not even the strongest 11. And they came out winning without conceding again. So you would say on paper, the best thing that happened really to Atletico 3 weeks ago is that they only conceded 1 goal in Milan, away in Milan. And so when it's just a 1 goal difference, anything is always possible, of course. For me, the key would be Antoine Griezmann and his fitness. Can he play? Can he even start? He obviously hasn't played since the first leg 3 weeks ago. I think they kept him because they didn't want him to happen to anything to him before the game next week. So I would expect he would start, but if he's not on the pitch, it's just not the same. I know it's a bit of a cliche, we've said it all season long. If Griezmann is good and on the pitch, then Atleti are good. If he's not there or if he's not good on the day, they're not good. It's as simple as that. And I really fear for them because this Inter team is just wonderful at the moment.
I'm sure we'll be talking much more about that game on the next edition of the show. Be sure to join us.